Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints podcast series on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt. Burkhard, welcome back. Great to catch up after our last chat about South Africa last week. I know one of today's big events is the 30th UN Climate Summit taking place in Brazil. It was exactly 10 years ago at the 2015 Paris Summit that 195 countries pledged to slow warming, strengthen resilience, and start to replace fossil fuels by clean energy. Now, Burkhard, I know you're covering some of this in your current UBS Viewpoints letter. So to begin, maybe Burkhard, can you share with us some of your views on where we are and where we're heading to begin today's conversation?
Well, absolutely. You know, I think the amazing rise of clean energy is really like this proverbial idea whose time that has come is mightier than all of the world's armies. And it seems to me like a very big wave that's lifting many boats, not only for the planet and vulnerable economies, but for investors, very importantly. And of course, that's our focus right here now. But maybe just for perspective, let me begin, as you indicated, with the Paris Accord, which took place or was signed 10 years ago. Back then, CO2 emissions were still rising by almost 2% per year. That growth, it seems, according to the experts, is slow to 0.3% in renewables as a mix in the global energy mix, as a part in the global energy mix, have risen from 9% back then to 34% today. In just 10 years, they are now the single biggest source of electricity. They lead the global energy revolution, I'd call it. This is not just an evolution. This is much more profound. And meanwhile, of course, fossil fuel demand is falling, and not surprisingly, the price of crude is declining. In fact, while 90% of all CapEx investments in the global oil and gas go to maintaining current production, most of the CapEx in clean energy serve to grow its power production. You know, it's interesting. Today's solar power production alone exceeds even the most optimistic scenario that was produced back then by the International Energy Agency by a factor of 15. One thing that's important to understand is that the biggest driver in all of this is China. The country is the world's biggest power producer. It has since created more than double as much as the clean energy production capacity of the US and Europe combined. What's more, it's raised the electrification of its own economy to 32%. That's up from about 12% 10 years ago. And that, again, is something like 8 to 10% higher than the electrification rate in the US or Europe. And in some of its economic centers like Hong Kong or Guangdong, the electrification rate even exceeds 40%. China now produces 60 to 80% of the world's photovoltaic panels and wind turbines. It's actually earning more from its clean tech industry than the U.S. earned from its oil and gas exports. And these developments have actually put a substantial dent to global warming, whose 4% degrees Celsius trajectory back in 2015 is cooled somewhat, according to the expert, to around 2.5%, which is still dangerously high, but it shows that a lot has actually happened since that last UN climate summit, the Paris Accord, 10 years ago.
Well, very fascinating. Numbers sometimes speak louder than words. So thank you, Burkhard, for sharing those powerful facts. Very eye-opening. Now, we know that the two fundamental challenges which the current climate summit addresses is to slow global warming and to strengthen global resilience. One is the quest for cheap, ubiquitous, clean energy, which you addressed. The other is the quest to lower carbon emissions and strengthen resilience. Meanwhile, Burkhard, what does the absence of the United States from this year's UN Climate Summit imply?
Well, indeed, those are the key questions. And so here are just a few spontaneous thoughts on them. Let me start with the last question. Of course, the U.S.'s absence weakens the climate summit, but, you know, maybe it's turns out that leaving the ball with China, Europe, Japan, the global south creates other benefits, like maybe a stronger sense of urgency. Who knows? I don't have a strong view on this. But what does inspire me with great confidence is that the energy revolution has left the station. And there's no turning back. It has powerful momentum, both in rich and equally in vulnerable countries. What I see is a new industrial sunbelt is fast being born from Latin America to Australia through Africa and Asia. It holds 70% of the world's wind and solar potential and owns 50% of the minerals necessary for the global energy transition. Just look at how solar power has recently transformed countries like Pakistan or Nigeria, which is very eye-opening. It is, I believe, an idea whose time has come. Now, let me turn to your other questions on carbon emissions. The fact is that Beijing and other countries are still reluctant to give up on coal yet. It's clearly one of the biggest culprits in CO2 emissions because coal still offers cheap baseload energy, especially at night when the sun doesn't shine. But in my view, investors should see the disruptive innovation potential in clean energy. Let me just give you one simple example which addresses the problem that we all know, that on Earth the sun doesn't shine at night. So wouldn't it be nice then if we could harness solar power 24/7? So here's what some startups and the U.S. Department of Energy actually proposed. Shoot solar panel-equipped energy-transmitting satellites to space. Let them collect high-intensity, uninterrupted solar radiation by using giant mirrors in space to reflect huge amounts of solar rays onto smaller solar collectors. Beam this radiation wirelessly to Earth in a safe and controlled way, either as microwaves or a laser beam. Then, this can provide steady, uninterrupted transmission of power through day and night. One such satellite could provide around a gigawatt of energy to the Earth. That's enough to power large cities. Let me be very clear here, then. I do not know if this idea will succeed or not. But what I do know is some scientists, government officials, and seasoned investors actually believe in it. And, whatever it's worth, it's just an example of the power of better ideas. And that, in my view, is proliferating at our time, and will certainly keep driving investment returns.
Well, that's certainly interesting to hear. Meanwhile, Burkhard, what are the climate-related investments where investors can make a positive difference?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So in no particular order, let me just name a few which I'm quite interested in and intrigued by. First and foremost, let me mention that the S&P Global Clean Energy Transition Index is rallying. It's up almost 60% year-to-date in total returns, because it surfs this big wave which investors simply cannot afford to ignore. Second, in my view, Chinatech is one of the most attractive investment opportunities these days. It's highly relevant to China's clean energy, and we believe it has room to run. Third, global warming is driving demand for insurance business. Not surprisingly, during the last 5 years, total annual shareholder returns in the insurance business were around 13% per annum, and there may be more to come. Fourth, and on the back of that, the cat bond market, which is worth around $60 billion, is doing very well because it offers sophisticated investors an attractive performance and diversification potential. And last but not least, the S&P Carbon Efficient Index has seen a substantial increase in annual total returns, which were actually more than 21% annualized during the last 3 years. That's almost double their 10-year track record and shows, once again, this is a big idea that is whose time has come, which might be mightier than all of the world's armies.
Well, very unique insights. Thank you, Burkhardt, as always, for spending some time with our listeners and our clients here on the podcast to share. And very timely, as always, and good food for thought on the heels of the 30th UN Climate Summit. So a great catching up with you, as always, Burkhardt, and do look forward to our next conversation next Wednesday.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure, Dan. And you too. Have a good rest of the day. Thank you, Gnaw.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investor investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.